This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Executive Athletes Podcast. And I want to thank everyone that has been listening and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're a tremendous help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe it is the best way to get to really know the guests. So if you hear a phone ring, a dog bark, a kid scream, we're just normal human beings trying to do awesome stuff. So bear with us. But this week's guest is pretty unique. His name is James Fell, and he wrote a book called The Holy Shit Moment. And once I heard about that, I'm like, I got to talk to this guy. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read the bio from his website, much easier than me trying to, you know, script something or put something together. And it's actually a great story that a lot of people, I think, can really can really understand. So here we go. So I was in debt, drunk, flunking out, tipping the scales towards obesity. A single moment changed my life. I was in a state of despair over my situation, and with a sudden awakening of massive insight, my path altered course. My passion to succeed awakened. I was driven to accomplish something meaningful with my life. It was that moment that split my life in two, dividing it into before and after. After this transformative experience, I began to ace my courses, got out of debt, got in shape, married an amazing woman who graduated at the top of her class from med school, attained two master's degrees, had a successful business career, raised a couple of athletic straight-A students, and accomplished a midlife career change to become one of the most popular health and fitness writers in North America. I've been writing articles for the Los Angeles Times since 2010, the Chicago Tribune since 2012, had columns with Chatelaine and Ask Men, and been published in Time Magazine, The Guardian, Women's Health, Men's Health, and many others. I've lost count how many celebrities and stars and athletes I've interviewed, been on TV and radio a whole lot with, and given presentations to thousands of people on how to change their lives. And also his blog gets millions of visitors a year, and I'll have him talk a little bit about that. But thanks, James. Welcome to the show. Tell us who James Fell is from your own mouth.
Well, James Fell is embarrassed after you read all that crap. It really sounds like I'm bragging now.
Perfect. If you're not selling yourself, no one else is.
You're talking about how this is all unedited, and I'm like, man, I should have drank a couple of beers beforehand and burped through the whole thing or something.
Perfect. But anyways, yeah, give us, you know, talk to us about, you know, about James Fell. It's a, you know, sounds like it was a big transformative, you know, experience.
Well, I like to think I'm maybe a little more humble than what you just read. That's the about page from my site where you're supposed to brag about yourself. The rest of the time I try and be a little more chill. But yeah, you know, I did go through that whole life was on cruise control, just not really accomplishing anything and not really feeling like I lacked purpose in life. And there was that transformative experience that really changed everything. That it wasn't, mine was more of a global change rather than a focal one. Some people have these focal changes like, oh, I quit drinking or I lost weight or something like that. Mine was just, no, you just need to do a total overhaul and change everything. And became a very driven and ambitious kind of person, which continues to, okay, accomplish that goal. What's the next thing? Sort of attitude toward life. But that wasn't what really initially gave me my interest in this phenomenon of the life-changing epiphany. It was after having published one book and thinking, okay, what's my next book going to be? I was looking for an idea about something to write about. And after having working with a lot of people in terms of weight loss, came to the realization that a lot of people, when they lost weight, it was not that tortoise, slow and steady baby steps approach. The most successful ones had some type of holy shit moment where they were suddenly driven to say, this is it. I'm doing it this time. It's going to work. And they had zero doubt and they were very successful. And that was what led me down this path of, you know, recollection, like, well, I had one of those moments. And I started asking on Facebook about other people that had these moments. And a ton of people put their hands up and said, oh, yeah. And it wasn't just weight loss. It was tons of different things. smoking and drinking and relationships and work and education. And I was like, oh yeah, we got a book here. This is going to be cool.
Wow. And what, you know, talk to us about your career before you started this. And then what was your holy shit moment?
Well, so the I've had more than one. The original holy shit moment was from my early 20s, where I was flunking out of school. And this is, I'd never done anything. Like, gym class was the worst hour of my day. And I was a C student. And when I went to university, I got into some easy program, just barely, and started failing very quickly, drinking too much, in debt, all that stuff from the bio that you read. And I had a feeling that, you know, if I didn't get my act together quickly, I was going to lose my girlfriend, the one that I mentioned that graduated top of her class from med school. And so I just had, I was in this state of despair because life sucked. And I was going to get, I had gotten the letter saying, you're getting kicked out of school. And that was really signaling the beginning of the end of my relationship. And I'm reading the university newspaper, and there was just a quote in there from Joan Baez that said, action is the antidote to despair. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that says, oh, just read some fancy motivational quote and it'll change your life. But sometimes it can. In this instance, I just happened to be in the right mental space where I was in a state of despair, and I came to the sudden realization that it was the lack of action to actually do anything that was causing this. And that if I got down to work, I could fix all of these problems. These were problems that I dug this hole myself, and I had the ability to climb out of it. And that sudden realization was a transformative emotional event that made me realize, okay, we're on a different path here. That everything's going to change from here on out. And instead of going to the pub to drink beer, I went down to the registrar's office to appeal my case and be let back into school. And I ended up getting a couple of master's degrees. And then I had a successful business career after that. And at the age of 40, decided, you know what? I'm done with being a marketing executive. I want to be a writer. That was sort of a smaller epiphany, but it was more about life's too short to spend it doing something you don't really love doing. And I was always a very creative type of person. And that was the new direction that I took at the age of 40.
Wow. That's a big move from one to the other. What was it like to make that decision? I know a lot of people really struggle to make that decision, right? They get stuck into bills and life and kids and, you know, just sort of end up just continuing doing what they're doing because they're afraid to do, you know, do what's necessary versus leaving, you know, the comfort.
Well, everyone that goes through a risky follow your dreams type of career change like I did should have what I have. And that is a doctor for a spouse.
So that does definitely helps a lot.
You're supposed to laugh there, Ken. Everybody else, I've told that joke.
It is true years, though. No, it's so true. It is. There's nothing better than that.
I told that joke in front of at a keynote speech a couple of weeks ago, and it brought the house down. What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
No, okay, one, but no, it's a true story. I had a very supportive and financially stable spouse. But here's the thing: like, I was making good money. She was making good money, and all of a sudden, it, you get caught in that. Like, oh yeah, we're raking it in. We've paid off our debts. We're saving. Everything's great. You don't want to let that go. Like, that's a hard thing to. We crave stability, and we crave that type of, once you get that disposable income thing, you don't want to go, you don't want to lose that. But it was still, it wasn't one of those situations where we had to worry about paying rent or buying food or anything, but still it was a bit of a tough call. And there was a transitory period where I did some, you know, marketing work for money and then transition toward being a writer. But yeah, there was absolutely an income hit, but it was also chasing something that I absolutely loved doing and being driven to make a go of it and actually make a decent living at it. And it was, you know, your likelihood of making as much money as a writer as opposed to a marketing executive that's kind of remote, but still it's been a great decade where I've had so much fun. I was a lot more present for my children, where, you know, I was home more often and was able to take them to appointments and, you know, pick up the slack in terms of, you know, I did most of the housework, and I've always been the guy that did all the cooking and stuff like that. So it's been fun. It's, you know, money isn't everything, and I love what I do.
That is amazing. So talk to us about, you know, the book. Well, how did you, you know, come about, you know, creating this title, number one? Number two, what are some of the key points that you focus on to really, you know, to really take that next level, you know, or take that, leverage that holy shit moment into something that's real?
Well, the title came after the idea. The idea popped in when I was out for a bike ride one day, when I was actively trying to figure out what am I going to write about next. And I'd been thinking about different ideas for a book, and it just sort of popped in out of nowhere. You know, I had a sudden insight about sudden insights, started doing some investigation, realized that this was a very viable idea for a book. And we got, you know, I worked with my agent, I wrote sample chapters and a proposal and everything. We didn't figure out the title until a couple of weeks before we even pitched it. And it was my idea out of a list of many. And I wasn't really super keen on the title. I thought it was, you know, I didn't really want to swear in the title. I thought that was, you know, not, I swear in my writing all the time, but it's just thought, I don't want to swear in a title just for, I think it's been overdone for shock value, but my agent said, that's what it is. What you're writing about, this sudden life-changing epiphany, it is a moment where someone says, holy shit, because it's so powerful. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. and the publishers liked it and everybody else liked it. And I said, okay, it grew on me. That was what became the title for the book. But what it's about is that sudden transformative experience that sends you off in a new direction with a quest of something that must be fulfilled. And the interesting thing was that at first I was just going to make it about an analysis of what it is, not really a how-to. And it was my agent's idea to see if we could turn it into a how-to, which I thought was quite an audacious undertaking. But when I began to do the research and talk to, you know, world leading researchers into the phenomenon of sudden change and sudden insight, most of them were very supportive of the ideas. Oh yeah, this is something that can be primed for. You can definitely engage in certain type of behaviors that are going to dramatically increase the likelihood that you're going to have this kind of an experience.
And that's amazing. And I know when we're chatted earlier talking about this, is there isn't a lot of research into that, the epiphany moment, is there?
There's some, but certainly not as much as other types of behavior change, which is, generally speaking, focuses around that more slow and steady baby steps, you know, be a tortoise, not a hare kind of approach. And the reason why is that it's far more enigmatic. When you look at baby steps, it's pretty easy to map out saying, okay, we are going to get you to quit smoking or start an exercise regimen or something like that. We can lay out logical steps in terms of gradual change that doesn't suck too much, doesn't create too much suffering, and with a bit of willpower and a bit of grit, you can power through and eventually drag yourself over this motivational tipping point and develop habits. There's lots of ways to set up tests to psychologically analyze that and lay it all out. What I'm talking about, you can't really do that. It's right. Like I said, it's enigmatic. This is a sudden change that happens in a moment. It's deeply emotional. It's transformative. It comes from the unconscious. It pops. It's a bolt out of the blue. That's this lightning strike of, wow, this is the answer. And it's so incredibly individual. That's based on your past experience and education and knowledge and wisdom and what's happening to you in that moment and what your mental state is and psychologically where you're at in life. And it's just, it's you can't design tests for that, but you can, on the edges of it, understand how the human brain works and what our psychology is and how we, and there's actually been some fascinating neuroscience that I put in chapter 4 of the book, where they did brain scans using fMRI and EEG technology to look at the brains of people that had a sudden insight. And we know that, okay, these are the very creative and emotional parts of the brain that are lighting up when they have it. So we can look at things like, okay, what's the science of creativity? What's the science of, you know, emotional-based decision-making, what we kind of refer to as gut instinct sometimes, and extrapolate ideas of what we know and be able to offer some pretty darn good suggestions about how to make this happen.
Right. And what, give us a few of those suggestions. You know, you're talking about, you can lay the groundwork for these types of things to happen.
Absolutely.
Can you predict it? How does that work? That's sort of crazy.
The way that I refer to it is, okay, there's no guarantees. My caveat is no guarantees, but lots of possibilities. And how you enable those possibilities, step one, you got to believe that this is something that can happen for you. And how I help people believe that is that I tell them, this is something that happens all the time, more than you realize. There's a lot of people that have had these past experiences and they just didn't tell you about it because it's usually intensely private. And the reason why, it's such an emotional experience. It's one of these things where you're like, it kind of blows the top of your head off. There's deep feeling. Sometimes people weep because of the sudden understanding that they've achieved into their own life. And it takes them in a new direction and they feel weird talking about it. And so they're not that forthcoming. They may never tell anybody, or they may only tell one person. And I was able to get people to talk to me because as a researcher asking the question, they're suddenly, it flows out of them like a great unburdening. And there were people that told me their stories about their life-changing epiphanies they'd never told anybody before, not even their significant other. So that's an important thing to understand, is that a lot of people are having these, they just don't talk about it. And when you understand just how common it is, then you get to the point of realizing, well, if it's happening a lot, then it can happen for me. When you have that fundamental belief, then you just open yourself to the idea that it is something that could happen. And then, go ahead.
Nope, continue. I was going to say, so it's just really believing that something could happen without...
That's the first part. That's right. Not all.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because that sounds too easy. I believe...
Yeah, no, it's gonna, yeah, that's... You know, that's I'm not that airy-fairy. There's more science to come.
All right, perfect.
So a lot of it, like I said, is based on creativity. And because it's often finding the answer to a question, right? And that's the way that our brains work, is we have to creatively come up with it. And it's not like it just materializes out of nothing. It materializes out of your unconscious that you've been cramming, you know, all sorts of cool shit into for decades. And it's based on our life experience, our wisdom, our education, our other insights and exposure and activities that we've utilized through our entire lives, and taking that and going into even further analysis. So a lot of people, when they think about, okay, what this book is really about is, what am I going to do with the rest of my life, either in a narrow way or a more global way about who I am and what my purpose is. But we don't think about that too much. We go through day to day in a transactional basis of just reacting to events and the environment and just, you know, tiptoeing our way through life, trying to make it safely to death. And this is about saying, okay, hold the phone. I don't want to do that. I want to consider, what could life be like if it was more of a thrill ride, if I had a real purpose that drove me? And you don't necessarily need to know what that purpose is. It's about discovering it. It's about opening yourself to the possibility of, there could be some greater mission in life for me that I have not yet discovered, and beginning to analyze, what could it be? Who am I? Where have I been? What's my situation? And doing a lot of internal as well as external analysis of asking tough questions about yourself and your life and your situation to maybe figure out, what contribution could I make to the world that would be meaningful for me and meaningful to other people, and utilizes my skills and capacities and really is going to give me a driving passion moving forward? Most of us aren't asking these questions of ourselves. So you begin with that. So that is part one of the action phase, is this analytical component. And then the next part is, part two is really critical, where a lot of people neglect, is what we don't realize quite often is asking ourselves those tough questions, the answer doesn't come while you're trying to solve a problem. It comes later when you're in a distracted state. This sudden insight, the reason why it seems like a lightning strike out of the middle of nowhere is because it happens while you're not trying to solve the problem. It happens when you're out for a walk in nature, letting your mind wander. It's when your mind is in a distracted state by a shower or lying in bed when you first wake up, or meditating or praying, and letting these various bits of information in your brain meander and collide and gel in a profound way, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And you suddenly realized with that, holy shit, that this is it. This is what you've got to do. And when that happens, it's this deep emotional sense of rightness that sends opioids and dopamine receptors apeshit in your brain, because it's just such a sense of true, you found your true north and your purpose, that it drives you forward towards this goal with, for like months and years through adversity, and just saying, because you're just not going to give up, because you just know that this is something that's got to happen.
No. And I think, like you were saying, it's those altered states is when you're not thinking about it, is when it seems to happen. I know, the executive athlete's name came to me on a run, or a lot of stuff when I was struggling in schoolwork, the easiest way is go work out and come back and see what you think of when you come back, instead of just sitting there and trying to force it out of yourself. It's actually here, shift your focus. And that's when a lot of stuff really seems to happen, is when I, for me, it's when it's doing something physical. I'm sure it's, it's different for everyone else.
And I didn't invent this. I mean, you look back at philosophers from thousands of years ago, and they extolled the virtues of the walk in nature to ponder or not even really think about the problem, but just allow the thoughts to go through that free association process so that they could find out the answer to the difficult question that they've been thinking about. Einstein was a big fan, Charles Dickens, Immanuel Kant. These are people that had their greatest insights when they weren't poring over a book or in a lab or something like that. It was while they were out for a walk. And that's one of the things, the reason why I put so much emphasis on this is because in today's society, we are afraid of being alone with our own thoughts. And that really inhibits creativity. If you're going out for a walk and every time, no offense, Ken, you're listening to a podcast, that's not going to allow for insight. For me, like I did an audio narration for this book, and I know that people will listen to it while they're on a walk. And my advice is, well, maybe you should, listen to it on your drive or something like that. You need to get comfortable being alone with your own thoughts, because it's when you're not having something demand your attention, like a podcast or the radio or scrolling through your Facebook feed or TV or something like that. These sudden insights, the reason why the term shower thoughts is so common is because generally we're not looking at our phones in there. There's a white noise effect. It's comfortable. It's not a challenging task. It's something we've done 1,000 times. We don't have to think about it. It's one of the very few times of day when we have that opportunity to be alone with our thoughts. And you need to create more situations like that, where you're alone with your thoughts and get comfortable in that sort of semi-meditative state that allows these answers, these meaningful answers that transform your life, pop into your head.
No, I'm a big fan of, every now and then I listen to podcasts or books. I just need something, I'm going something long. But for the most part, I don't train with any noise, because it's that insight that comes to you. It also allows your brain to just sort of relax. In the same sentence, it's never happened to me either. If you leave angry to go for a run or a bike ride, more often than not, you don't come back angry when you're at the end, right? It's a great one of those types of things. And seriously, to just sort of step away and allow the diffusion to happen. Number one, number two, also to really, you know, if you have to think about it, you can think about it, right? But you're not getting distracted by something else. It is that quiet time.
And as a writer, you know, creativity is a big part of my job. I have written thousands of articles and I had so many people ask me, how do you come up with your ideas? And I have way more ideas than I have time to write about. And they came to me usually when I was either on a run or a bike ride.
Yeah.
Because it's when you get that chance for them to pop in. The one thing I will say is that I like to listen to music when I run, but you know, I'm a dinosaur and I like that old time rock and roll that I've heard all these songs thousands of times.
Right. So
they're not that distracting in terms of, you know, it's this brand new tune that's going to demand my attention. It's just that comforting background noise that, if anything, for me personally, I find helps me get into that flow state.
Right.
Letting my unconscious be creative.
Now, would you consider this being a flow state, right? The holy shit moment, does it really come to you when you're in a flow state? Does it usually come when you're in despair? When does it usually come?
So the flow is actually a fairly technical term that right. I can't even pronounce the guy's name who analyzed it.
Except my eye.
Mihaly something or other. The flow state is actually quite a focused state. It's when that's usually something where you found your passion and you're intensely focused on it. Like when I'm writing something and the kids are going, dad, 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 dad. And I'm like, don't even hear them. That's in a state of flow. So actually that's not usually when it happens. So I kind of misspoke there. It's more of in it, just letting your thoughts go anywhere. It's where any possible idea could pop in there, where you're very generally relaxed and not anxious. You're in a positive mood and just feeling good. And like when I'm out for a bike ride on a sunny day and the Rocky Mountains are off in the distance and, you know, an awesome Rush song is playing on my iPod. And you're right. Like, that's when the cool ideas come.
No, good stuff. And what about, you know, and yeah, the physicality of it, right? I think, again, this is a group of executive athletes. I think they do that, but I'm sure it happens when you're doing art or, like you were saying, meditating or, you know, programming or doing whatever you need to do.
Sorry, I missed that for a second.
No. I'm saying, you know, we're talking a lot about the athletic side of it, right? Of being in sort of that state through movement of riding your bike or running or doing what you're doing. But I'm sure it also comes when you're writing or, like you said, meditating or praying or doing art or, you know, or playing music, that type of stuff. I'm sure a lot of it happens there as well.
And I think, so there's some interesting research about the whole being outside thing. And I think it has to do with the fact that nature has a tendency to seduce your attention as opposed to demand it. Whereas if you're stuck inside, there's more things that, there's that kind of familiarity with, you know, okay, there's my desk, there's my chair, there's my kitchen, that kind of stuff, that it doesn't break you out of static thinking. Whereas when you're outside, it kind of allows your brain to appreciate possibility more because the external environment is more variable. And you can also be put in that calm state of movement. And one of the interesting things about this is that the more intense the movement, the more demanding, metabolically demanding, like for example, the faster you run, the harder you run, the less likely you are to have a sudden insight because your brain is focusing on pushing, you know, pushing the legs to run faster. So walking or running at a more comfortable pace is more likely to enable this type of sudden insight where you can just go on autopilot, where you don't have to worry about pushing too hard and just letting your brain go anywhere.
No, that's huge. What would you suggest to people that are looking for that change, right? Is it something that, like we said earlier, it's how do you prep for it? Say someone is sort of, you know, like you were saying, in despair, right? And how do they prep for it to get out of that despair? Or is it just something that comes over them?
Well, so I've already suggested, you know, there's the first thing is you got to believe it can happen.
Right.
Then start asking yourself some tough questions about what's your identity, what do you really value, and how could that manifest in terms of, you know, the person you feel like you'd really want to be. What could possibly be your quest in life as to, you know, giving you purpose in a way that wants you to try to create greatness and utilizes your own capacities and talents and abilities, and then engaging in those distraction techniques of walking or shower thoughts or meditation or prayer or whatever, where you just get comfortable being alone with your thoughts. That is one side of it. Another side is experimentation. Part of the analysis phase can involve thinking, okay, say you're inactive, say you sit on the couch all day. Well, what are things that you could try that might spark your passion? It's not all got to run on a treadmill or got to do CrossFit or got to get a personal trainer and lift weights. It could be anything. There was the example of Leslie in the introduction that became a champion fencer. And, you know, that fencing's a really intense sport, but it's not something that a lot of people think of. You could try that. You could try joining a soccer league or water polo, or I don't know. It could be anything where, you know, there's a line in the book that says the opportunities for change are more plentiful than there are beers in a Munich autumn. You don't have to follow the formula that other people are doing. And so take a few taste tests and try the traditional baby steps approach of, okay, if I was going to adopt this new behavior, what would be the slow and steady path to change? And you're acting like a tortoise, but you're thinking like a hare, where suddenly you get transported in terms of your motivation to a much higher level of adherence, where you went from, man, this is hard, I'm not sure if I like this, to suddenly, this is who I am.
Right. No, that's amazing.
And that happens a lot. Like, that happens to people all the time. And you don't know what it's going to be. I never thought, when I thought, oh man, I need to lose weight, I never thought that I was going to get really big into weightlifting. And I did. Like, the idea of weightlifting, that was something jocks did. That was not me. And I hated gym class. And I thought, oh, running? No, I'm never going to run. I'm going to maybe just torture myself through this stair climber thing for a while and burn some calories. And then years later, I decided to try running. And I realized the creative nature of it and really got into that mind wandering, just, you know, the distance runner by himself, listening to some tunes, thinking cool thoughts. I really got into that. And eventually, you know, I did something that few people do, which is qualify for the Boston Marathon.
That's amazing. No, that's true. It's so true. I think people go down one, they think they're supposed to go down one path. And I think a lot of it is from their upbringing or their parents versus going down the path that's really for them. And a lot of people, it takes a long time.
Can you hit the nail on the head? That's one of the things that I address in the book, is societal expectations, and not just parents, but environmental and gender roles. That's one of the things that I discuss, is that you know, women have a tendency to be placed in a specific type of gender role more than men are, in terms of, you know, you're not allowed to have these really audacious, ambitious goals because you're supposed to, you know, stay home or raise kids or be a mom or that kind of stuff. And not saying you can't do those things as well, but they are often put in a more constrained type cast role, or it could be the geographic environment that you're in, that you need to be willing to say, no, I'm not following these rules. That's bullshit. I'm going to set my own path in life. And these are not easy conclusions to come to when you have to battle against that kind of stuff. This is hard. But when that life-changing quest of something that you feel that you must do is unleashed, you just feel it would be harder to not do it.
Right. No, it's huge. And I think, yeah, it's that outside pressure, I think, kills more dreams than internal pressure, right? They think they have to live up to some expectations of someone else. It's, what is it? Gary V says, you know, tell your mom to F off, right? You know, go after your own dreams.
And I was very lucky to have a very supportive mother.
Yeah. So, right.
I wouldn't want to tell her to F off. She's a wonderful woman.
Mine just told me, if you don't know what you want to do with your life, go make more as much money as you can, because you can buy happiness quicker than, you know, better than being poor and looking for happiness. So, you know, that was my advice there. But so, you know, we've been banging this out for half an hour. Oh my God, very quickly. But, you know, what are some of the insights you would give to someone, right? You know, it's sort of say, hey, you want to go, like, you know, we said you need to believe, number one, but, you know, just say, hey, you know, Joe athlete, I'm looking to get to the next level, right? Or I'm looking to get to the next level in business or whatever they're at. You know, what would you tell someone to how they should get to that next level in their life? I think, you know, there's a lot of people there that are looking at your book like, hey, you know, I'm good where I am, but I want to get to greatness. Do you have any advice there?
Well, good is the enemy of great. And that's one of the books that I quote a few times in there is Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, which is a business book, but it can actually apply to people as well, where one of the things he talks about is the big, hairy, audacious goal, which I think that there's a lot of people that have this true greatness in them, and they're afraid to pursue it because they think, well, that's not me. I don't necessarily have that in me. And guys like Jim and me are saying, you know, you might actually. How do you know if you don't actually try what it is that you could accomplish? And there's a really important lesson that Jim has in his book, which is it's about not pursuing greatness for greatness' sake, but pursuing something that makes you inspired to create greatness. So when you, it's about finding a mission that is sincerely meaningful to you, where you get a rage to master, that this inspires me to be the very best that I can be and do something amazing with it, as opposed to just saying, I want to be rich, I want to be famous, I want to do something important. Now, you find a thing that is yours that you're going to be great, amazing at. And that is what is going to, you know, maybe make you rich, famous, and make a big contribution.
But, you know, even if you make the contribution to one or five people, right, there's people, other people out there with that same thought who are afraid to take action. But if they have a leader, they will go follow someone and you can do great things together.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to change the world.
No.
Perhaps it's just your small part of the world where it's not just about you. It's about those around you and people that you care about, that even if you have a profoundly positive impact on one person's life because of this, that's meaningful. That's worth doing.
Perfect. And it looks like your book just was published here a couple of weeks ago. Where can people find it? Where can the people find you? Tell us a little bit about that.
They can find my book almost anywhere.
Perfect.
We've got good distribution in bookstores across North America as well as the UK. But if they're looking to purchase it online, the easiest place to find links are on my website, which is bodyforwife.com. So that's wife with a W, Body for Wife. And there's a books tab. There's links to all the different purchasing platforms, including if they want to get an audio version, I'm the one that did the narration for it.
Perfect. And the one last question, and I forgot to ask you, where did the Body for Wife domain name come from?
So that was from, geez, almost 20 years ago when Body for Life was really popular.
Yep.
And my friends were doing the Body for Life program, and we all worked out together, and I was in better shape than they were. and I was just doing my own thing. And one of them said, geez, James, you're in such great shape. Like, what's your secret? And I just jokingly said, well, I'm on the Body for Wife program because I liked looking good for her. And they laughed. They thought it was funny. So it was just this inside joke among friends that I decided that when I became a fitness writer that was going to be my URL. And people seemed to get a kick out of it.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, James, it was awesome to have you on here. I think, you know, it really some deep thoughts to really sort of get you outside your comfort zone, right? Is to really, I think sometimes instead of chasing your comfort zone or expanding your comfort zone, sometimes just let your comfort zone expand for you. And I think that's what a lot of things you're talking about is just sort of believing that it will.
I got to admit that, you know, this book will make you think some uncomfortable thoughts and potentially go in some uncomfortable directions, but it's going to be exciting.
Perfect. Well, James, thanks for being part of this. And if anyone has any questions, comments, or feedback, or needs to get in touch with James, feel free to email me or email me at ken@executiveathletes.com. But thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great week. Go out there and train hard. Thanks, everyone.